Make room on your bookshelf for John Palmer's all-new edition of his bestseller, How to Brew. This essential resource has been completely updated and expanded, and there are 5 totally new chapters. Order a copy of How to Brew at brewerspublications.com, amazon.com, or better yet, support your local homebrew supply shop and pick up a copy of How to Brew there. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, July 20th, 2017. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, former Mead Maker of the Year Matt Whitey joins us to share some experimental meads, including meads made with nuts and ginger, and a couple of boche or burnt meads. One of those we originally tasted on the show way back in 2013. If you're new to home brewing or would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. If you buy any of our DVD combos, you get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener. And don't forget to get a copy of our Brewer's Logbook. You can use it to log and track up to 50 batches of beer. You can find me on Twitter. My username there is basicbrewing, all one word. And we have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, think of us first and click on our associate link on the right-hand side of the page on basicbrewing.com. It won't cost you any extra. You'll be helping us to bring you this show and greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes, our Android app on Amazon.com. We have a Windows Phone app. We're on the BlackBerry Podcast Directory. We're on the Stitcher app. We're on Google Play Music. And we're on the iHeartRadio app, too. And finally, if you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our virtual guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support. And thanks to everybody who's done so already. Here's an update on my homebrewing activities. I bottled my 100% rye session beer that was kettle soured with a kombucha SCOBY, or mother. I dry hopped it with an ounce of Chinook. And the flavor from the 2 ounces of Cascade that I put in at pasteurizing before fermentation was already wonderful. So I'm looking forward to tasting how bottle conditioning affects the flavor. It's a 2-gallon batch. It's going to be only about 1% ABV, so something very sessionable as the summer heats up. Sessionable and refreshing as well. I'm planning to brew a 100% wheat beer this week, more of a standard gravity beer, Hallertauer hops and Hefeweizen yeast. And depending on how the beer tastes after fermentation, I'm considering adding some honey. I got the inspiration from one of the breweries that we visited in Minneapolis, 56 Brewing. They had a honey kolsch on tap that was really delicious, and the honey character was very present but delicate and balanced well with the beer. And, man, I've been looking for an excuse to integrate honey in a similar way with a beer, and this one may be the one. Of course, it would be difficult to brew 100% wheat beer without using brew in a bag. And, you know, that gloppy wort would probably stick a traditional mash tun, at least without a bunch of rice hulls. And you know that I use an electric brew in a bag system from our sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. The electric system paired with my Warthog EBC 130 controller makes brewing very easy and predictable. And Desiree made a video for the High Gravity Facebook page that shows the features of the Warthog family of electric brewing controllers. So if you're not if you haven't liked High Gravity on Facebook, search on Facebook for a High Gravity home brewing and winemaking supplies to find that. The video shows what applications each controller is suited for, and also, on their Facebook page, we can see that High Gravity now has a NEIPA ingredient kit called Not Everyone's IPA. It's said to have in-your-face flavor, juicy and cloudy from flaked oats. Yum. So head on over to highgravitybrew.com to check out all the electric controllers and turnkey electric brewing systems, and their delicious kits as well, ingredient kits. And if you use the code EBC75BB, EBC75BB, you can get $75 off your purchase of electric brewing gear. EBC75BB at family owned and operated highgravitybrew.com. Well, HomebrewCon is always a great place for us to meet up with homebrewers and professional brewers to taste some wonderful stuff and get some tips and, of course, inspiration for making our own versions back home. And we got to meet with two mead makers this time around. Ryan Richardson from the Mead House podcast shared some very tasty meads, and you'll hear him in a future episode in the coming weeks. But for this week, Steve Wilkes from Steve's Brew Shop .com and our buddy from Wisconsin, Bob Stimsky, joined me to sample some delicious experimental batches from Matt Whitey. Well, Matt Whitey, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
It's great to be here, James.
Former mead maker, 2014, crossing fingers for this year.
Yes, I have one that went through to the final round, so we'll see what happens. Hopefully by the time this broadcast happens, we'll have known.
Yeah, I guess I said just mead maker. You're still a mead maker. Whatever, it's mead maker of the year, I guess, is the important thing to say. So here joining us, Steve Wilkes.
Hey, James. Good to be back.
Bob Stimsky.
Hi, James. How you doing?
We're tasting mead again today. I feel so lucky and grateful that when we come to these places for the conference, that people say, hey, I got some stuff for you to taste. And we say, well, okay. So we're going to start. We're going to go nuts. We're going to start out by going nuts here, Matt. What do we got?
Well, I've got three different meads, all with nuts, all with varying degrees of nut usage and different methods of using nuts. And I've got a walnut mead, a peanut butter mead, and then a peanut butter and jelly mead. And all three use different methods to kind of infuse that flavor into the mead itself.
Wow. Getting nut flavor into a beverage. You know, I've tried it with beers, and it's tough, or at least for me it was tough. I'm interested to see how yours turn out. So why don't you crack up open the first one, and Steve, what's your experience with nuts and beer and mead?
None. I've never made a mead with nuts in it, and so I'm interested to taste these, and I see that they're carbonated, at least this one is.
Yes.
So that was my first question is, are these going to be still meads or sparkling meads, because the oils in the nuts present such a problem for head retention. So I'm just curious about all that.
Bob, your experience with nuts, besides family members.
I made beer with acorn flour, I think it was, and it didn't really turn out very well, but it's been a long time. I don't really remember what went wrong or anything, but I definitely use acorn flour. It was something different for me.
I made my first attempt at the fruitcake barley wine. I roasted pecans, I believe, and chopped them up and put them in the wort, and they just kind of bobbed along the top during the boil. And I don't know that I got much nut character. So which one is this one that we're tasting?
So this is the walnut, and again, this is one of those exercises, and it teaches you something, right? So I met a mead maker from Poland at the Mazer Cup a couple of years ago, and he has these great walnut meads, and I said, I'm going to make one of those too. And what I did was just basically made a mead and then chopped up walnuts and put them in. And I was very worried about the astringency from all the walnuts. So frankly, I did not put very many walnuts in. So then when I actually tasted it, when I bottled it and tasted it, I go, boy, I really don't taste too much walnuts. I can tell that they're in there, but boy, it was something that I needed to switch it up and take another look at how to put more peanut flavor into it, and that's kind of what this is. So this was made about 2 years ago. It's a traditional mead. I would say it started out at about 1040, came down to about 1030, mm-hmm. And it's just very light, almost traditional, but you can tell there's this outlying, there's a little bit of walnut in it, but I was really afraid. Walnuts get so astringent. So I didn't want to use too much, and now I wish I would use more. But I just chopped it and put it in.
I was going to ask you, did you use English walnuts or black walnuts?
Black walnuts.
Okay.
Yep.
And those would have scared me, too, because they're a lot more flavorful than English walnuts. Yeah.
And did you say 1040 to 1030?
I'm sorry, 1140 to 1030.
Okay, okay.
Just to clarify. I figured that's what you meant, but just to clarify. So what kind of honey?
Wildflower. I almost always use wildflower. I have a great local supply over across the border in Bob's area, Wisconsin, and he makes a great flavorful wildflower honey, and it's very inexpensive compared to maybe some of the Tupelos and metal foams of the world, so that's what I use in this.
And the yeast?
1171B, the Narbonne yeast. And that's I use that with each one of these three meads.
Boy, it's certainly delicious and sweet, but not cloyingly sweet. It's nice and balanced in that regard. You know, super clean fermentation characteristics. I don't know that I would, you know, if you'd said there's a nut in here, and I don't know that I would have noticed.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't have either. But you know, since I know there is, I can kind of pick up that little bit of nuttiness. I mean, I think it's there, but you're right. If you hadn't told me, I'd just think, it's just a kind of a little bit bigger honey, I guess.
Yes.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't catch any nuts out of that, but boy, it is really nice. Oh, man.
Yeah.
This is beautiful.
It is delicious. Now, let's talk technique as we're going through these. What is your technique on nutrient additions?
There's a lot of different ways to add nutrients to your meads. There's a lot of different calculators out there on the internet. All of them are approximations upon what you need. So there's TASNA, staggered nutrient additions, and I use the I add nutrients when I'm available. I travel for a living, but I always try to stop at about the 1/3 sugar break, and I use I've been using Fermade O. But I've also found that some DAP, diammonium phosphate, also works. It adds a lot more YAN, yeast assimilable nitrogen, which is really what the yeast need. And DAP, frankly, gives the most amount of YAN to your mead. So I've even though I really like just using straight Fermade O, I've been starting to use a little bit of DAP later on in the fermentation. So DAP will actually not be detrimental to the yeast in that first like 12 to 24 hours. So I'll use Fermade O, and then at the very end, I'll use some DAP. And I kind of look at it as Fermade O, Fermade K is the, specifically Fermade O is like the fruits and vegetables, and you really want to load up on that. But then in the last, like a marathon, in the last mile, that's when you can kick it up with some Gatorade and sugar to finish out the fermentation, because you really don't want to put too many nutrients in your mead. If you're left with that after the 1/3 sugar break, that's going to give other microbes and other things something to feed on after you've kind of bottled and packaged up your mead, and you really don't want that above and beyond the normal Flintstone vitamins that sometimes you get when you put too much nutrient into your mead. So I've really been, most of the meads here have been mostly Fermade K, Fermade O at the beginning, and then a little bit of DAP at the end.
And this one was was a little bit carbonated, right?
Correct.
Was that on purpose? Because it is a sweet mead, and traditionally, at least we've heard that it's hard to carbonate a sweet mead. So, talk about that.
Frankly, I think it's part of the. I had a flooded basement recently. And I think I usually sulfite my meads. I used to not be a big fan, you know, totally natural, but I've been getting into more sulfiting my meads, specifically when I have a fruit mead. I think it keeps that fruit character bright. And in this case, I did not. I thought it petered out. So I started pretty high, and I thought it was done. It is carbonated, so I have to just fess up to that. But I think, but I have a Minnesota basement. So generally speaking, if I keep cases in the basement, it's been pretty cool. We've had some recent flooding in my basement. I'd like to put some money into the college fund, but instead it's going for the sump pump fund, and had to move some meat around. And I think maybe that's how I picked up some of the carbonation, because it must have got warm. So I don't know what else to say, except for I probably should have used some sulfite and sorbate to stop that. But apparently I did not on this walnut meat.
Well, it's not bright. It's not like fizzy at all, but, you know, so it's not detrimental at all.
Yeah, I was just gonna. Yeah, I'll echo that. I was just gonna say it's a lucky accident.
And I think at the end of the cup, I think I am picking just a little bit of a nutty character. There's something a little nutty, I guess is the adjective. But it's, man, it's
delicious.
It is a delicious mead.
So should we try the peanut butter mead?
Oh yeah, you bet. Guy, so. Yeah. Normally, I'm skeptical of stuff that's too off the wall, but I have high hopes with your reputation and the meads that you've shared with us before. So
looking at the label, and it seems like both of them say PBJ. I grabbed this. We're at the National Homebrew Conference, and now all of a sudden I see both of them say PBJ. But I think I did it in two different methods. So this first one, let me pour it.
It's pink. It has a pinkish hue, as Steve and I would say, and Bob.
So this is a peanut butter and jelly mead. In this case, I used PB2. So it's the dehydrated, defatted peanut butter. And what I found with this is that you lose a lot of the mead itself. So you take your water, your honey, you add in PB2, and about a third of the carboy is going to settle, and you never can, you just have to rack off that top, and you lose so much. And you get some more peanut butter flavor. I certainly get more peanut butter now than I did in the walnut, but I was very disappointed in how much I lost as a result of that. Mm-hmm. So the next mead that I'll talk about in a second, I used a different process, but PB2 does do a better job, and I think in this case, you can also use a tincture, so you can take that same PB2, put it in with some Everclear or alcohol, vodka, and add that in as well, and I actually did that with, these are all kind of bottles for competition, etc., but I think I did that with the keg. So I added a little bit of a tincture there as well. So there's technically, I guess I'm talking about four different ways to add peanut butter, peanuts or nuts. You can cut it, mm-hmm. use the PB2 actually in the primary, and then you can also use it as a tincture.
And then what about the jelly character?
Black raspberries. Yeah, so and it's tough too because I want it to be sweet, but like you would expect from a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, but there's a cloyingness that I don't want it to be. I want to be able to actually try a few ounces of it and not just have it be over the top like a peanut butter jelly sweetness.
In the beginning I didn't care for it, frankly, but I'm warming up to it. there was something in the very beginning, and maybe it was because of the peanut butter character. Maybe I'm just was not ready for that. But the more I drink of it, the more I like it. What do you think?
Well, it certainly tastes like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I mean, that's remarkable. I've never had one of these before, and I quite like it. It's really well made. It's really clean. There's nothing that I could criticize about it. It's probably not one that I would drink a lot of, but it's just pretty damn cool. It's like, wow.
I feel the same way. It's, it's not overly sweet. It's not even close to cloying or anything. What he said, it was great. I could drink a lot of this.
Well, I finished mine, so. And again, wildflower honey?
Yes, all wildflower honey. And again, these are all what I love about home brewing is the learning experience, right? It's great to find a great recipe, make it the first time, and boy, it's dead on, and that's exactly what you like. But I find I learn a lot more from going through these kind of iterations. Mm-hmm. And it's not always perfect, but in the same token, it's kind of fun to go through that and understand what those different styles and methods represent.
Okay, and number three.
Talking about that PB2,
yes,
I've used that a couple of times. I made that chocolate-covered beaver nuts. It's a recipe. I ate it twice, but I found the same thing. When you put it in, it just goes down to the bottom, and it sits there, and you're really only using the edge. I'm wondering maybe if we should be adding it like we add nutrients, you know, just a little bit at a time or something, because, you know, that whole jar goes right to the bottom.
Certainly. I'm just tasting this next one, and I don't like it as much, frankly. this method is much more peanut. This is the most peanut buttery of the two. Yeah. I also notice that the fruit in this one almost comes off as a little bit almost oxidized. It has a brownish look to it that I'm just being critical here. Mm-hmm. Much more peanut. And in this case, it is, I used boiled peanuts. So I actually took pounds and pounds and pounds of peanuts, put it into a kettle, mm-hmm. boiled them. And this is in response to losing so much of the mead in the kettle. I wanted just to infuse the peanut flavor into the water. Mm-hmm. Then from there, I put it into, a fridge and let the oil, excuse me, I put it into a bottling bucket, put it into the fridge, let it coagulate, then I open up the bottling bucket spigot, runs out, and then I infuse this with the honey and the raspberries. And the raspberry bag ended up being much like a BP oil spill boom in the fact that it actually then mopped up a lot of the extra oil that was remaining. Yeah. So that ended up working pretty well. But I'm actually not, I mean, this is, again, a work in process. I'm not sure if that resulted in kind of this more muddied fruit flavor. The other one was much brighter fruit flavor. And in that case, I used it in the secondary. And in this one, I used it more in the primary. Right. And it's not that it's bad. It's just it's less present as opposed to the other one.
On the peanuts, when you boiled the peanuts, did you boil whole peanuts, meaning the shells as well, or just the nut?
Just the nut, unsalted, roasted nuts. And you just buy them at bulk at a local grocery store, and they need to be unsalted. But it really, lots of oil in there. Yeah. And I've heard some people say boil them for hours. I only boiled them for maybe 45 minutes to an hour, and I got a lot of peanut flavor. But I was worried, and I almost pick it up here, there's almost like a little bit of an ashy, like I don't know if it's a burnt flavor, but I don't know if boiling it too long you might get too much of that. So.
Well, that's why I asked if the shells were involved, because I was wondering if we were picking up some tannin, I don't even know if it's tannin or not, but some kind of woody flavor. Obviously, that's not the case, but that's why I asked the question, that there might be some woodiness coming from the shells.
Definitely got the peanut butter in here, and that's really nice. Yeah. I really like that. It's very good. That method you use with putting the stuff in the refrigerator and having it coagulate, I did the same thing with a bacon beer I did, and that worked real well. All the grease came to the top, and then I poured off the bacon extract, and I put it in my beer. The only thing was I forgot that that's heavily salted, the bacon, and that beer was terrible. But I got to admit, though, after a while, because the salt seemed to settle because of the salinity thing, it separated, and it came out fairly quickly, and then the rest of the beer was real good. It was a nice bacon beer, but you got to be careful.
I'm running the brisket with that.
Oh.
I got to say that I mean, that you're right, the fruit character, the jelly character is not as bright as the first one, but I'd like the peanut character better in this one. So to me, it's kind of a draw, you know. You got better in one side and not as good on the other. So I think I like this one better.
Yeah. I think I do too. I really do. I could really pull it out better, and you could add any sweet flavoring in there, and it, the natural flavoring, and make a perfect peanut butter and jelly. It really comes out nice.
I think, you know, and you've been talking about extracts in some recent episodes. Mm-hmm. This might be something that might benefit from, like, a teaspoon of, like, raspberry extract to really brighten it up, I think, a little bit to bring that forward. Because to me, it seems a little bit muddled, and or put more raspberries in the secondary or something of that sort, because I think that might bring that forward. And maybe I could actually use a little bit more sweetness in this one as well. But out of the three, this is certainly the most peanut buttery.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what's the next step? I mean, what would you change differently to do to modify it even more?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I would add more fruit in the secondary and not be afraid to just add maybe a little. Some people shun the extracts, but if you use extract only, I think that's when you run into problems. But if you use it as something to brighten up an existing fruit, I think they really do well. So I think that's what I would do on this one is add extract and maybe some fruit in the primer secondary.
Yeah, to me, extracts like that should be used as a seasoning agent, like you might use salt or pepper or whatever in your food. And so I do have customers that come in, well, I made a this or that, and I flavored the whole thing with extract, and it tasted like Wang. And I'm like, well, yeah, I'm sure it did, but because that's not really the way to use it. So I agree with you. A teaspoon, a tablespoon, start slow, add a little at a time until it makes your palate happy, and then you're good.
Well, I've got an extract. After we stop recording, I've got my peach mead that I just flavored it just with the extract. So be interested to see what you think of after we shut off the recording and after we're off the record. But Steve has tasted it.
Oh, it's really good. And when
but looks good on you though.
But I mean, it's the right ratio of it. So
yeah, you got a free bowl of soup with that hat. Yeah. Looks good on you though.
That's right.
All right, so now let's go. I think we've got time for the rest of them. You want to do the ginger one?
Well, that.
So we can make Marianne jokes.
Sure.
Oh yeah.
You want to give me a splash there,
well,
Steve?
We've got two Beauchés and then a ginger. Ginger, frankly, I think is probably going to be the best of the three. So why don't we end on the ginger, and then we'll see what we think. Let's try the Crock-Pot Beauché, and this is very lightly caramelized. You talked about Tim Lieber. Mm-hmm. He's one of the folks that knows a lot about using a Crock-Pot. I've leaned on him and this podcast to kind of dial this in. So I'll try the Crock-Pot, and then we'll go to the next Beauché, which was frankly on your podcast in 2013.
And I remember that. In fact, I referenced it in a podcast we did yesterday with a different mead maker, and I was remembering that Beauché mead. So I'm really anxious to taste it.
Yeah, you were the one that introduced us to the Beauché meads back then. Mm-hmm. I actually kept, I might still have like partial bottles of those meads from back then. So I was so impressed with them. You're looking at me disparagingly.
Well, I'm sometimes a critic. When I have Beauchés, some of my homebrew friends say, "Don't talk to me about it until I drink it," because to me this is a little hot. It's too boozy, and I would like to have a little bit more caramel. But in this case, it was just a 2 pounds of caramelized honey. And then 2 pounds of mesquite honey. So it really, in a crock pot, which really does not caramelize it, I only put it in there for, I think, 4 hours. So it really has a very light caramelized taste. I think you could almost pass it off as like a half and half avocado honey type of mead. But you can get a little bit of the caramel. I think it's a little hot for my liking, but it's going to be on the lightest end of the Beauché. We're going to go to the heavy hitter next.
Well, the crock pot meads are the ones you put on in the morning when you go to work.
That's right.
And when you get home at night with the kids, you just have some mead because, you know, it cooks all day and doesn't take a lot of energy.
That's right. No, I can see where you're saying it may be a little hot.
Yeah.
But I'm enjoying it. I think it's, you know, and maybe I'm thinking of meads that I've made, and you know, if I made this, I'd be pretty happy. But you probably have a little higher standards than I do.
Well, anyone has higher standards than you do.
I shouldn't have tossed that straight line straight to you.
I looked up and saw a microphone, and it is delicious. It is a little hot. I'm wondering how, and you may have already said it, but when did you make it?
Oh, just last year. So this is only maybe 6 months to not even a year old. And I do find that, and I gave a talk on Beauchés at HomebrewCon this year about Beauchés, and I think that sometimes the caramelization of the honey does the sugars in the honey can affect your fermentation to some degree and lowers the pH. At least that's the evidence that I've found. So that could cause some problems with fermentation. And now I'm more cognizant now than it's a great thing when you actually have to teach something, you learn things.
Yeah.
And I've learned that the pH has been being affected along with that, so I'd need to do a better job of monitoring that, and I think that might be some of the reasons the yeast kind of struggled here a little bit.
What do you think of this? What do you think of this, Bob?
Well, I got to repeat. I can catch the extra heat on this one, but it would be easy enough to, you know, make adjustments if you had it kegged or something like that. It would be fine because, like you said, James, I drink it at home. I'd be very happy with it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, on a personal note, stop pouring water, the rinse water, in the bucket, because I was planning on having that later.
We're diluting the rinse bucket.
I don't want no water in there.
It's a session dump bucket.
Oh, well, they said to hydrate, so I suppose I could take a little in there.
You've been watching the movie Sideways.
Well, what I wondered is if in time, let's say you revisit a bottle of that in a year, if the hotness might not settle down some.
Probably. I think the fusels are, they do go away with time, but ultimately I'd rather start with a good mead than start with something hot. Sure. So it's all a learning process.
Yep.
So I'm excited to taste the revisit the the Beauché mead from the traditional Beauché mead that we that you graciously sent us, and thank you again for
indeed.
I'm pouring small pours, but I mean, obviously, we'll have. There's a rest of the bottle here, so if anybody wants more, they can have more. Obviously, but
okay, mark that.
Now, have you, Bob? Is this your first Beauché mead? No. You were in the crockpot with Tim Lieber, right? You weren't in the crockpot, but but you tasted those, right?
Yes. I fell in love with them immediately. So I'm planning on making some when I get home. I love them. Mm.
I haven't tasted it yet. It's so aromatic. Really smells great.
I think the edges certainly come off. From 4 years ago in 2013, it was much more acrid, and it's mellowed like a whiskey would.
Yeah, it's very definite. It's like a spirit. Yeah, it's very much like a spirit in the night. It's just really, and I haven't even tasted it yet, so.
Well, I remember this as being almost like a cup of coffee, you know, in that there was the roasty, acrid is a bad word. What's the word? What's a more positive the word? That sharp. Yes,
sharp.
Roasty, sharp character was more prevalent, more like toasted marshmallows, which I like, you know, like a burnt marshmallows. This has mellowed out. 10 times.
Yeah,
it's a completely different beverage than before, and I like it. I like the other one too, but it's interesting that it's mellowed so much.
Yeah, it's frankly a whole different beast. Before I was almost again, it's almost like these peanut butter meads. It was kind of a, hey, this is something when you really burn sugar, what's going to happen to it? And I wasn't necessarily I wasn't an advocate for it at that time, at least this really burnt one. But boy, I tell you, a lot of people talk about, oh, well, if it's a bad mead, it's not going to do better. But boy, 3-4 years has really done a trick on this one.
As the more I drink it, the more I'm getting toasted marshmallow, not burnt marshmallow, but toasted marshmallow. And the sweetness from the mead, the sweetness from the honey, is really coming through as well.
Oh, man, is that smooth. I get a lot of the sweetness coming across as marshmallows. Marshmallows, I suppose, the burnt marshmallows. But, man, I'm in love with this. I really do love it.
I get the toasted marshmallow as well. But I also get leather and I get black pepper toward the end. But particularly some leather notes that are really nice. If you ever played baseball, you know, if you ever played baseball and you're kind of sitting there in the dugout and you're kind of chewing on your glove a little bit. I mean, I'm serious. If you were a boy and you played baseball, you chewed on your glove.
Yes.
And it's got that, there's a little bit of that leather taste in there, and it's really nice. It's a very grown-up kind of taste.
but approachable.
Oh, yeah. I don't mean like grown up as in, ooh, who'd eat that?
Yeah.
I mean, like, this is a very sophisticated thing going on in here.
But it's very drinkable. The drinkability has gone up over time. I remember when I tasted it the first time, it was like, oh, this is really good. But it's like sipping on a good cup of coffee. This, I could drink a lot more quickly. But I wouldn't want to because I want to savor it. Because it's building up all these complex flavors and all the caramelization effects and all that is just building up on my palate. And, man, it's good.
It reminds me of like a sticky bun, only you got the burnt sugar part of the sticky bun that's really good, or the pecan pie that's got the little burnt, crispy sugar part that's like, that's the best part and you really want it. That's what this is, only liquid.
So we're not going over the details of how you made it because there's a whole episode back in the archives that people can refer to. I don't know that there's anything that we can add to that other than just go back and listen, right?
Yeah, frankly, I brought my recipe book, but it doesn't go back that far. So I should have brought my recipe book from 2013 because I tend to make a lot of mead. So I don't really have listen to the podcast in 2013 because, frankly, I don't remember exactly what I used.
There you go. And the archives are always free. We don't put a paywall up. So go back and you can listen to all 500 and however 30, whatever, however many episodes that we have. So awesome. And if you get the app, there's a cool search function that you can use to search for Matt Wiede, Weiede.
Yes, very good. Thank you.
And he'll pop right up. So, and that's cheap, just a couple of bucks.
Well, I appreciate you having me on the podcast. I also have a speech at the AHA website I just gave yesterday on Beauchesne. I specifically mentioned this podcast.
Woo-hoo! Nope.
In 2009, there was a mead panel that you moderated, and at the end, you were trying to wrap it up, and Charlie Papazian said, well, hey, one more thing. Has anybody ever heard of a Beauchette? Didn't even know really how to pronounce it. Luminaries, Kurt Stock, Byron Birch were all on the panel. Never heard of it before. And that was one of the things that really triggered it. Triggered my, there's all these folks that know a lot more about staggered nutrient additions and everything else. Those trails have been blazed. And I thought, well, this is something that's interesting because nobody else knows anything about it. And that's kind of the culmination of this presentation that if you're a member of the AHA, you should be able to watch and listen to as well. It's just a great honor. And so I kind of tying the two, the podcast and also the presentation together. So
awesome. And you want to go ahead and serve the ginger one and Bob and Steve, you get your Marianne jokes ready.
I'm ready.
But we were talking, Steve and I were in the bar last night at the hotel, and we turned around and there was a guy with our podcast, the video podcast, on his computer, and he used that as a way to introduce us. And Magnus from Sweden,
yep.
He's a writer for the Swedish beer magazine over there. Anyway, we were talking, and one of the things that we talked about was this feedback effect, this feedback loop, where you put information out there either through a podcast or a speech or whatever, and then people use the information, and then they share it with other people, and all this builds to where, everybody in the community is a stronger brewer and knows more about the process, and we all get to enjoy better beverages. So cheers to that. Yes. What do we got here, Matt?
Well, it's a ginger mead, but first I'd like to echo what you just said. Kurt Stock said the same thing on the mead panel today, and the reason he wants to share his recipes and methods and everything else is so that when he goes up to another person's house, he's not tasting bad mead. I think he used a different word, but in the same token, that's the point. Is we're all trying to, I'm not trying to pay the mortgage here with mead making. I'm just trying to help my fellow home brewer get better at making mead. So the ginger mead is what I said is going on. It got pushed to the final round. I don't know, again, at this point, mm-hmm. how it did, but when you say get your Marianne jokes ready, this is actually Steve Piazza, who's also a member of the Minnesota Homebrewers Association, made a mead called Not Mary Ann. And
beat both of you guys.
Ah, so
man.
So he's
That's
way
what I was gonna use.
Way ahead of you. And he is somebody that is my mentor and has helped me a ton. And, you know, they were talking in the mead panel that why are there so many mead makers from Minnesota? Well, it's a feedback. It's a feedback loop that we're getting immediately. And one of the things that I've made with ginger was using raw ginger. And it's not that that's bad. That can be great. He used candied ginger. And that's what's really taken this off to a different level. And that's what I've been using. So I go to the grocery store. I buy a ton of bulk candied ginger. You can go to the homebrew store. Sometimes it's a little bit more expensive. Sorry, Steve.
No, okay.
And they go to the grocery store. And so this was a 3-gallon batch, and I used 2.5 pounds of candied ginger in the secondary. And I took the ginger, and I put it into a blender with some vodka. And that was, in my own mind, I don't know how sanitary this ginger is. I'm sure it's probably not much, there's probably not much on it, but just for my own sanity, I took like 100 proof vodka, I put it into a blender, I blended it up coarsely so I could essentially get it through the neck of the carboy. And I, but I poured off, this is a great thing for a cocktail, then I poured off that vodka, save that for later.
Yeah.
And it also did a secondary thing of taking the sugar off of the ginger, right? So now I'm not putting just normal cane sugar. Not that that's bad, but it's a secondary kind of benefit of putting that vodka, blending it. Then I can also just shove it through. I took like a stirring stick, put it in a funnel, and just kind of shove that 2.5 pounds of crystallized ginger down. And I think, I want to say I put it in there for about 9 to 10 days. Just kind of left it in there, racked it off of that, and then that's what left this really kind of non-vegetal, and that's sometimes what you get with raw ginger, not very hot, like a wasabi, note, retro-nasal thing that you would get with raw ginger. This is a very kind of mellow, and that due to Steve Piazza, so hats off to him.
This is one of the most amazing ginger things I think I've ever tasted. I love this mead. It's the character. It's like candy. It's like I'm eating candy here. I have a technical question. You know the candied fruits. I've used them in my fruitcake barley wine,
mm-hmm.
And sometimes on the label it has preservatives. You know, I can't remember whether it's potassium sorbate or whatever. And people have asked me, are you worried that the preservatives have any effect on the fermentation? And in my experience, they have not. And I just wonder if your method, in addition to getting the sugar off there, I just wonder if it rinses some of that stuff as well.
Good question. I've struggled with preservatives and sulfites. I mentioned earlier, I really think that sulfites actually do a good job of protecting it. I don't believe, and I'd have to check my recipe, I don't believe I use sulfites on this one because I generally do it for fruits, but I think maybe there are some preservative qualities to it, but essentially it stopped fermenting. I don't have any bottle fermentation going on. But I would say this, that while I think this is a very good mead, and it's almost a candy mead, I probably could dial back the bricks by 1 or 2 points and still would be very good. It could be, I almost feel like because over the last year, the ginger has kind of faded and maybe that's a result of me not using sulfites. That it's almost, I would like, it's almost a little sweeter than I'd like, but, in the same token, it is what it is. It's in the bottle. I'm not going to fuss with it any more than, you know, at this point, but.
Well, I tell you, if this mead could walk a tightrope, it's a mile long, it would make it because it's so well balanced.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I love it. I love ginger. Okay, I love ginger. Just leave that there. Okay.
I love ginger.
But sometimes ginger can be so sharp and burn and everything. And this was, everything was like it was rounded edges. It went down smooth, you know, and I knew it was ginger. What does Steve have to say?
I got nothing, Bob. I got nothing.
Just stay away from the Marianne Dirks. You'll be okay.
It's like a sickness. I can't help it. This is a delicious mead, and it deserves to win. And if another mead beats this, it'll be one hell of a mead.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say. And we're talking in the future now, so we'll know.
Yeah.
But, man, I got to say, that is so good. And I got to try that technique because I really like that a lot.
You really use more ginger than you think. I mean, like I said, a lot of homebrew stores will sell like 4 ounce packets. I'm talking about using 2.5 pounds.
Right.
And I think that really helps really get a lot of ginger flavor infused because you're not using raw ginger. So you don't get that. I mean, you probably could get away with 4 ounces of raw ginger, but then you're going to get more of that sharpness.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do get some heat from the ginger as well as the sweetness from the beverage as well.
The thing that I find with people who are cooking, who say to me, what's wrong with this? It doesn't taste quite right. I always say you should have put more of whatever it is in, you know, the flavor. And it's the same thing with meads and wines, too. I mean, like country wines. It's like, don't be cheap with the ingredients. Go ahead and put more in. You know, go for it and learn from it. I mean, if you put in so much that you go, oh, boy, that's too much. It's a lot easier to dial it back the next time than to keep adding it incrementally over who knows how long a time, you know, until you get to what you like. But so that's the same advice I give my customers, exactly. Put in more than you think for something like this. Now, don't do that with garlic powder.
Man, that I'm glad we ended with that one. That was that, and but I think I'll go back to the traditional Boucher as well.
Yeah.
And then leave Bob with a spit bucket.
Right.
So, Matt, thank you so much for getting in touch and sharing these meads and sharing time with us and sharing your expertise. And now we're going to turn off the microphone and subject you to our stuff. I'll probably do mine first since it's not as good, and then we'll share Steve's stuff as well. But Matt Whitey, thanks again.
Well, thanks so much for having me. Thank you for the years and years of podcasts that you've produced. As a father of 2 8-year-old boys, I appreciate the fact that you have a PG podcast that I can put in the car, have on in the house, and be doing my home brewing. And I learned so much from your podcast, and it's just great. And thank you for all the years of service that you've provided to the general homebrew public.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, James.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Man, were those some delicious meads. We sampled a couple of my brews afterwards, and I pretty much wish we hadn't, because they paled in comparison. Matt's ginger mead didn't medal, unfortunately. That means that the meads that did win the category must have been incredible, because I really like that ginger mead. Congratulations to this year's Mead Maker of the Year, Scott Schar from Davenport, Iowa. He's from the St. Paul Homebrewers Club. And we still got a lot of great stuff from Minneapolis coming your way in the coming weeks. So stay tuned for that, along with some stuff that I'll be recording outside of that, too. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com, or just fill out the contact form at basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link, where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcast. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. Get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo, and you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can find our logbook so you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all that out at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Chef's Choice 615 Premium Electric Food Slicer and The Fearless Baker, Simple Secrets for Baking Like a Pro. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe for your own magazine through the associate links
on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotz. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.